Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into the weeds on a critical issue, the strategic imperative facing U.S. federal agencies and, well, the path forward for an agile partner.
That's right.
The title of this deep dive is Why U.S. Federal Agencies Should Partner with Integrated Management Strategies, IMS, to Secure and Accelerate Speed to Mission. So our mission here is to dissect the blueprint for IMS LLC. We want to pinpoint exactly, you know, which mandates are forcing federal hands and, critically, which agencies and specific roles offer the highest potential for immediate impact.
Yeah, and that framing is spot on because, look, if you're tracking the federal market right now, you're not just seeing some temporary spending bump. What you're witnessing is what our sources are calling a permanent structural shift.
A structural shift, okay.
Yeah, it's fundamental. This whole market transformation, it's non-discretionary. It's being driven by these simultaneous policy mandates, zero trust, AI governance, getting ready for post-quantum computing. All of this is colliding head-on with relentless, sophisticated cyber threats, often state-sponsored.
So agencies don't really have a choice here.
They absolutely don't. They must modernize, they must secure their systems, and critically, they can't just rely on the old ways, the slow legacy ecosystem of the past. It won't cut it.
Right.
And this dynamic, it creates this huge compliance-driven demand. And that's where firms like IMS, ones that can actually integrate the strategy, the technology, and the compliance piece, they're really positioned perfectly to step into that gap.
Okay, so let's unpack that structural shift then.
Yeah.
Because understanding the just the sheer complexity and the regulatory weight that's on these agencies, I think that really explains why agility, like you said, is the real premium here.
Exactly.
It's not just about finding some extra budget somewhere. It's about spending the money they have to spend, the mandated money, effectively and quickly.
Absolutely. The whole transformation landscape, it's defined by this confluence, right? You've got security requirements, policy mandates, technology that's just plain obsolete, all hitting at once. And it requires agencies to really overhaul their systems from the ground up.
It's not just keeping the lights on anymore.
No way. We are definitely moving from that sort of passive keep the lights on IT model to something much more proactive defense, pervasive modernization. It's a whole new ball game.
And when we talk mandates, I mean, we have to start with the big one. The foundational shift in cybersecurity thinking, zero trust.
The absolute cornerstone right now.
Yeah, we know the old perimeter security, the castle and moat idea, it's just obsolete. Your workforce is everywhere, data's in the cloud.
Yeah.
You just can't trust anything inside your network by default anymore.
Precisely. And that philosophical shift, it was actually codified into policy by Executive Order 420028, improving the nation's cybersecurity. That was back in 2021.
Right, I remember that one.
Yeah, it set the baseline, you know, for modern defense. It required better info sharing, push for faster cloud adoption. But honestly, the document that really created the operational demand, the one that keeps CISOs up at night, is the OMB Memorandum M2209.
Ah, M2209, the zero trust strategy itself. Okay, so what does that demand in real terms, beyond just the concept?
Well, M2209 is where the rubber meets the road. It translates that high-level policy into concrete, measurable goals, and it does this across five key pillars with hard deadlines attached. Agencies have to act.
Okay, what are the pillars?
So first, identity. Agencies have to consolidate their identity systems, get rid of fragmented ones, and really enforce multi-factor authentication everywhere. No exceptions.
Makes sense.
Second, devices. They need a definitive inventory. No, every single device accessing their resources and reliably track and secure them, especially, you know, as they move between networks.
That sounds like a huge undertaking itself.
Oh, it is. Then, third, networks. Encrypt all DNS traffic, segment networks much more aggressively, and apply least privilege principles right down at the network level.
Okay.
Fourth, applications and workloads. You have to scan all your code, look for vulnerabilities before deployment, and manage access controls tightly at the application layer itself.
And the last one.
Fifth is data. This one's crucial. Agencies need to actually categorize their sensitive data, figure out what's important, and then establish tagging and protection mechanisms to secure it wherever it lives or moves.
Wow. What's really striking there is just the scale of the change required. I mean, this isn't just buying a few new firewalls, is it?
Not even close.
It sounds like agencies have to completely re-engineer their processes, maybe even their culture, definitely their architecture.
You nailed it. And that suggests the core opportunity for a company like IMS isn't just selling widgets or software licenses. It's selling the knowledge, the expertise.
How to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the critical insight here and really a key strategic takeaway for anyone listening. IMS is perfectly positioned to sell essentially compliance as a service.
Compliance as a service. I like that framing.
Yeah, because think about it. When an agency CIO, or maybe more likely the CSO, looks at M2209, they see this incredibly technical, complex organizational transformation staring back at them. They probably don't have the specialized in-house staff, or maybe just not the bandwidth, to write that detailed multi-year roadmap, figure out which commercial tech actually meets the requirements, and then manage that change across, you know, their massive enterprise.
So IMS steps in there.
Right. IMS can come in, write the complete zero trust roadmap that aligns perfectly with those five pillars, provide the needed expert staff, like information system security officers, the ISOs, who are crucial for implementation, and very importantly, make sure the agency can actually demonstrate compliance when the auditors come knocking.
So they connect the strategy to the actual day-to-day execution.
Precisely. They blend that strategic advice with the continuous technical execution needed to make it real.
Okay, so zero trust is the necessary defense strategy. But what about the actual infrastructure they're trying to defend? I mean, how is the government even funding this massive, clearly necessary overhaul of all this aging, inefficient IT? Moving to the cloud costs money.
Yeah, that's always the question, isn't it? Where's the money? Well, the primary capital injection mechanism for this kind of thing is the Technology Modernization Fund, or TMF.
The TMF, right.
It's essentially a revolving fund specifically designed to spur IT projects that promise real, measurable improvements. Things like better service delivery to citizens, enhanced security posture, and ideally long-term cost savings. But getting TMF funds isn't easy. It's competitive.
Ah. So if you're IMS, your role isn't just about the tech implementation. It's actually about helping the agency unlock the funds in the first place.
Exactly. That's a key part of the value. IMS can support agencies in developing that really strong, compelling business case needed for a TMF proposal. You have to clearly articulate the ROI, the security benefits, and show the TMF board you have a solid program management structure in place to make sure the project actually succeeds.
So it connects their management consulting arm directly to their technology consulting practice.
Perfectly. It's a natural synergy.
And modernization, almost by definition these days, means cloud adoption. FedRAMP is the big gatekeeper there, right? Setting that standardized security baseline for any cloud service the government uses.
It is absolutely the non-negotiable first step. If a cloud service wants federal customers, it needs FedRAMP authorization. And historically, achieving that FedRAMP authorization to operate the ATO has been, well, notoriously rigorous and slow.
Yeah, I've heard horror stories.
Right. So to try and address that friction and speed up secure cloud adoption, the government introduced something called the FedRAMP 20X program. That kicked off around March 2025. The whole idea is to streamline the process, use more automation, and allow more reliance on existing certifications where it makes sense.
So making it faster, hopefully.
That's the goal. And what this movement signals is a massive sustained demand for expert cloud strategy, for migration planning, and especially for cloud security engineering services people who can navigate these updated, hopefully accelerated FedRAMP requirements.
Okay, let's pivot slightly to another major policy driver. Securing the software supply chain. We've seen some really catastrophic attacks, like SolarWinds targeting those third-party components, not necessarily the core government systems directly.
Yeah, this has absolutely become the new risk frontier. Adversaries realize it's often easier to compromise a vendor than the agency itself. The response from the government has been a significant tightening of compliance.
How so?
Well, multiple executive orders, particularly around 2025, mandated the use of the NIST Secure Software Development Framework. Or SSDF.
NIST SSDF.
Okay. And then OMB Memorandum M2218 really operationalizes this. It requires agencies to start collecting self-attestation forms from every software vendor they use. These forms basically confirm that the vendor is following the secure development practices outlined in the SSDF.
Wow. I can just imagine the administrative burden there. Agencies aren't just buying software anymore. They're suddenly responsible for managing risk documentation for potentially thousands of vendors.
That's exactly where the bottleneck is forming. It's a massive undertaking. Agencies have to figure out how to integrate these requirements into their acquisition process, how to track all these attestations. They really need help building and managing their software supply chain risk management programs, SCRM, they call it.
So another area for IMS.
Absolutely. IMS can provide the management consulting to design the SCRM program and the acquisition support needed to actually operationalize it, track those attestations, ensure compliance ahead of the deadlines. And crucially, the sources point out a key deadline, December 1st, 2025, for the preliminary update to the SSDF itself, which means this demand isn't going away. It's just going to continue to grow as the standards evolve.
Okay, now let's look a bit further out to the future. Two areas where the strategic planning really needs to start now, even if the main impact feels a bit more distant. Post-quantum cryptography and AI governance.
Right, PQC first. Post-quantum cryptography, it's all about preparing for what some see as an existential threat. The possibility that a powerful enough quantum computer, what they call a cryptanalytically relevant quantum computer, or CRQC, could break the encryption algorithms that underpin, well, almost everything secure today.
Right, breaking RSA, things like that.
Exactly, and this isn't some sci-fi scenario 20 years down the line. OMB M2302, another key memo, requires agencies to begin inventorying all their cryptographic systems now. They need to know where encryption is used, what kind, and start preparing for the eventual adoption of new quantum-resistant PQC algorithms.
Why the urgency now if the threat is still maybe years away?
Two main reasons. First, the migration itself is going to be incredibly complex and will likely take decades. You can't just flip a switch. Second, think about the shelf life of sensitive data. If a sophisticated actor, say a nation state, steals encrypted data today, they can just hold on to it.
And decrypt it later when they have a powerful enough quantum computer.
Precisely. It's called steal now, decrypt later. So the government is treating this as a kind of slow motion catastrophe brewing. There's a key milestone coming up, December 1st, 2025. That's the deadline for CISA and the NSA to release a list of product categories where PQC is actually becoming available. That milestone is designed to force agencies to stop just talking about it and actually start planning the massive systems engineering migration required.
So this is a multi-billion dollar market opening up, but over a very long timeline.
Multi-billion, multi-decade. A huge area for long-term strategic planning support.
Okay, and then the other future-facing area, AI. But here the focus seems to be more on governance and risk management rather than just deploying the tech.
That's definitely the initial federal focus driven by OMB memoranda like M2410 and some follow-on guidance, M2521, M2522. The directive is pretty clear. Agencies must establish AI governance boards. They need formal structures to oversee AI use, and they have to meticulously manage the risks associated with AI deployment bias, privacy, security, ethical use.
So for a firm like IMS, what's the angle?
Well, this creates a prime, basically brand new service area. It's focused on strategy development, creating ethical frameworks, building risk management processes, and importantly, structuring the responsible procurement of AI technologies. They're essentially selling the governance framework that agencies need before they can even really start adopting AI at scale safely.
You know, listening to all this zero trust, TMF, FedRAMP, SCRM, PQC, AI governance, it strikes me that the policy volatility itself, the fact that new EOs and memos keep coming out, amending or adding to previous ones, that must be a recurring business driver in itself.
Oh, absolutely. That continuous flux, that policy instability, it's almost like a built-in recurring revenue stream for expert advisors. It keeps agencies in the state of continuous mandated change.
Are always reacting, always needing to update their plans.
Exactly. And it creates this ongoing demand for partners who can provide what the sources call rapid impact analysis and strategic realignment. Agencies need nimble experts, people who can quickly figure out what a new directive means for their existing programs and help them adjust course, often with very little warning. This structural uncertainty really validates the need for external, flexible strategic partners like IMS.
Okay, so the need is clearly there. It's massive, it's non-discretionary, and it's constantly changing. Now, let's really drill down into IMS itself. How does Integrated Management Strategies position itself to actually capitalize on all this?
Yeah.
What's their unique value proposition that solves these very specific high-pressure federal problems?
Right. So IMS positions itself, as the name implies, not just as another contractor, but as an integrated strategic partner. Their real advantage comes from, I'd say, two major areas. First is their status as a certified women-owned small business, or WOSB. And second is their highly synergistic portfolio of core services. That combination allows them to execute transformation holistically.
Let's start with that WOSB advantage. For listeners maybe less familiar with the intricacies of federal acquisition, why is that status such a big deal? Why is it a competitive differentiator?
Oh, it's absolutely vital in the federal space. See, federal agencies, by law, have specific mandated goals for the percentage of contract dollars they have to award to various small business categories. WOSB is one of those key categories.
So it helps the agency meet its own requirements.
Exactly. For a contracting officer, the CAO, or for the agency's small business specialist, selecting a capable WOSB like IMS actually simplifies their job. It's an easy, documented way for them to meet their socioeconomic goals while still acquiring really high-quality consulting services.
And it helps with partnerships too, right?
Huge impact there. It makes IMS incredibly attractive to the large prime contractors, you know, the Leidoses, the Booz Allens, the GDITs of the world. These big primes often have their own contractual obligations on their massive contracts to subcontract a certain percentage of the work out to small businesses.
Oh.
So IMS becomes this highly desired pre-qualified teaming partner for those primes. It gives IMS access to potentially huge programs they might not win on their own initially.
So it turns what might seem like just a designation into a really strategic entry point for accessing some of the largest federal contracts.
Smart.
Very smart. Now let's look at the other piece, the core services and how they create that synergy you mentioned. They have three main practices, right?
Yeah.
Cybersecurity, technology consulting, and management consulting.
That's right. And the synergy between them is really the key to their claim of being an integrated partner. They don't just sell these services off in silos. They connect them to deliver a single unified transformation outcome for the client.
Okay, let's break that down. Start with cybersecurity. This seems like the direct implementation arm for things like zero trust and risk reduction.
It absolutely is. Their cybersecurity practice is where they directly translate those mandates, like M2209, into concrete action. This includes providing the expert staff agencies often lack, people like information system security officers, ISOs, who manage the day-to-day security posture.
The hands-on folks.
Exactly. They also conduct the critical authorization and accreditation, or ANA, assessments, handle all the authority to operate ATO-related services. And we see evidence of their effectiveness here. The sources mention they successfully served as the prime contractor for cybersecurity support at the USDA OCFO, covering something like 60 different IT systems.
Wow, 60 systems.
Yeah, that's significant. They're also experts in things like cloud security engineering, which is vital now, incident response when things go wrong, and supporting either agencies or the cloud providers themselves through that tough FedRAMP certification process. They really aim to manage the compliance lifecycle end to end.
Okay, next up, technology consulting. This sounds like the team that actually builds the modern secure systems that the cybersecurity team then defends.
That's a good way to put it. The technology consulting practice positions IMS as the architect of the agency's future state. This practice handles the really heavy lifting of digital modernization. They focus on cloud smart solutions, moving to the cloud, intelligently broader enterprise IT transformation, consolidating legacy systems.
Just getting rid of the old stuff.
Right. And crucially, this is where they integrate those emerging technologies we talked about, AI-driven solutions, business intelligence platforms, advanced data analytics. The key connection here is ensuring that when their technology consulting team implements new tech, it strictly adheres to the governance standards maybe set by their management consulting team, and it's secured from day one using the zero trust roadmaps built by their cybersecurity team. It all has to work together.
Which brings us to the third leg of the stool, management consulting. Why is this practice so essential to the success of the other two? It might seem less technical.
Ah, but management consulting is the strategic glue that holds it all together. You know, big technical projects, especially complex federal ones, they rarely fail because the technology itself was bad. More often, they fail due to poor governance, weak management, inadequate planning, scope creep.
The human and process factors.
Exactly. So IMS's management consulting practice provides that essential framework for success. They offer expert project and program management, or PM. They can set up high-performing project management offices, PMOs, and the sources mention a great example. They actually established the enterprise PMO for the federal OCIO at the Department of Education.
That's impressive.
It is. They also handle governance structures, capital planning and investment control, or CPIC, which is critical for justifying budgets, and provide expert acquisition support, helping agencies navigate the complex federal procurement rules. This practice ensures that the technical deployments led by the other teams actually stay on schedule, stay on budget, and mitigate the execution risk for the government program manager. It's that integrated model strategy, technology, security, all managed effectively that really makes them, or aims to make them, indispensable.
That integrated model is powerful, but it requires access. And brings us to what you mentioned earlier, the key that seems to unlock the massive Department of Defense market, the Seaport Next Generation contract vehicle. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, Seaport NXG, as it's called, is probably one of IMS's most powerful strategic assets right now. It's a huge multi-award indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contract, an IDIQ.
An IDIQ, right. Lots of those in government.
Yes, but the importance of Seaport NXG stems from its incredible scope. It's not just for one small part of the Navy. It is utilized by all the major Navy systems commands, NAVSEA, NAVAIR, NAVWAR, NAVIFAC, NAVASUP, and the U.S. Marine Corps.
Wow. So for pretty much the entire Navy and Marine Corps market, this contract is like a pre-qualified pass. How does that actually translate into accelerating the mission?
It accelerates pretty much everything related to winning work there. Think about it. Without Seaport NXG, IMS would have to compete in these long, very costly, full and open solicitations every single time they wanted a piece of Navy business.
Which takes months, sometimes years.
Exactly. With the Seaport NXG vehicle, they get to skip that major hurdle. They're already pre-vetted. So they compete only against the other IDIQ holders for specific task orders that are issued directly under the contract. These task order competitions are much faster, much more focused.
So it cuts down the red tape significantly.
Dramatically. It reduces the administrative friction and lets them get focused on actually delivering the services the warfighter needs much, much faster. It really is their direct pre-qualified pathway into one of the largest, most complex technology markets in the entire world.
Okay, strategy always demands focus. You can't boil the ocean. So IMS needs to target agencies where there's a clear alignment with their services, where budgets are accessible, where there's some kind of compelling event driving action, and ideally, where they have contract vehicles like Seaport NXG.
Mm-hmm.
Let's dive into the Tier 1 targets that seem to tick all those boxes based on the sources.
Right. Tier 1, highest priority. The analysis points strongly towards the Department of Homeland Security, DHS. The compelling event here is unavoidable. It's publicly visible. It's documented. And it carries a mandate for action. The Government Accountability Office, the GAO, has designated DHS IT and financial management as a high-risk area.
Oof. That high-risk designation from GAO, that's basically like a four-alarm fire for agency leadership, isn't it? It puts immense pressure on them to take immediate, non-negotiable action and allocate resources to fix the problems.
That's exactly what it does. And the GAO's report from around July 2025, it identified a really startling number of deficiencies, something like 43 open recommendations, specifically under the DHS Chief Information Officer's purview.
43 open recommendations.
Yeah. Now, for a company like IMS, this is pure gold. It's not some vague wish list of things the agency might like to do someday. This is a pre-qualified, publicly documented list of business opportunities. IMS can literally walk into DHS, point to the GAO report, and offer targeted solutions that address those specific known compliance deficiencies. They can position themselves perfectly as the risk remediation partner DHS needs right now.
Makes sense. So within DHS, which specific components look like the key targets? Let's start with the brains of federal cybersecurity, CISA.
Right. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA. They are the operational lead for implementing that big cybersecurity executive order 1428 across the entire federal civilian government. So they are under massive pressure themselves to drive zero trust adoption government-wide and issue binding operational directives. CISA is just a prime target for IMS's cybersecurity consulting, obviously, but also their management consulting, helping CISA develop and implement those national-level strategic initiatives and guidance documents.
Okay. And what about some of the other big components? The sources mentioned FEMA, the Coast Guard, USCG, and IC seem to be tied together by a common program responding to those GAO findings. Something about financial systems modernization.
That's right. This modernization program is a direct response to the GAO flagging those financial management weaknesses across DHS. Now, looking at those components, the one presenting perhaps the most immediate, timely opportunity appears to be U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or IC.
Why IC specifically?
Because they apparently only started their specific financial modernization effort in fiscal year 2025. That means they are likely still in the critical planning and initial execution phase right now. This is the absolute ideal window for IMS to come in and deploy its management consulting expertise, things like program management support, strategic planning help, technology consulting on the system selection, maybe right at the very beginning of what will be a major multi-year program, Helping them set up the PMO correctly from day one could be huge.
Getting in on the ground floor.
Exactly. And interestingly, the sources also note that the U.S. Coast Guard has historically shown interest in something called an Infrastructure Managed Services Enterprise model, the acronym being IMS.
Huh. Okay. Nice little branding coincidence there, possibly.
Could be a small edge. You never know.
What about U.S. Customs and Border Protection?
Yeah.
CBP.
Yeah.
Huge agency. Lots of technology needs.
Yeah, CBP is another critical one. Their challenge often lies in needing really sophisticated acquisition support for their large-scale technology procurements. We're talking complex, often multi-billion dollar efforts involving critical national security systems. IMS, with its proven management consulting capability and acquisition and program support within complex federal environments, can really leverage that experience. They can help CBP's program offices manage risk better, oversee vendor performance more effectively, and control costs on these major procurements.
Okay, so DHS is clearly Tier 1. The other Tier 1 target mentioned is the Department of Defense, DOD, obviously massive, but also notoriously complex and demanding. Here, the strategy seems to hinge almost entirely on leveraging that Seaport NXG contract vehicle effectively.
It absolutely has to be the centerpiece of their DOD strategy, especially initially. The approach recommended in the sources is a classic land and expand strategy.
Land and expand, meaning?
Meaning IMS needs to use Seaport NXG aggressively to secure some small initial task orders. The primary objective of these first wins isn't necessarily massive immediate profit. It's about building critical assets within the Navy and Marine Corps ecosystem.
What kind of assets?
Three critical things. First, getting verifiable past performance within that specific Navy system command. That's crucial for winning bigger work later. Second, building strong relationships with the key decision makers, the program managers, the contracting officers' representatives, or C-Corps. And third, gaining invaluable insider knowledge about their upcoming needs, their pain points, their budget cycles.
That seems a little counterintuitive, maybe. If IMS is positioning itself as this high-end, expert-led firm, why focus on small orders where, frankly, commands often just look for the lowest price bidder? How do they avoid being seen as just a cheap body shop instead of a strategic partner?
That is the core challenge of the land and expand strategy. You're right. The way they overcome that is by differentiating through performance on those initial small task orders. They have to over-deliver. They need to demonstrate exceptional agility, responsiveness, and high expertise that maybe the larger, more bureaucratic primes struggle to provide on smaller niche projects.
So build trust through execution.
Exactly. That exceptional performance on the smaller orders becomes the currency, the reputation they use to compete for and win larger, more strategic prime task orders down the line. It's about proving their value proposition in a tangible way first.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, beyond just the contracting vehicle, what are the key internal drivers creating demand within DOD that IMS can tap into?
There are at least two massive drivers highlighted. First, the DOD's own cyber workforce strategy, the CWF strategy, covering 2023 to 2027. This isn't just about hiring. It addresses the really deep-seated talent management issues, the training, the retention, and the cultural shifts needed to truly dominate in the cyber domain.
So it's more of an organizational challenge.
Precisely. Which means it's not primarily a tech problem. It's an organizational one that requires IMS's management consulting services. Things like strategic workforce planning, organizational design consulting, and helping specific commands figure out how to actually implement the strategy's 38 specific initiatives.
38 initiatives.
Okay.
Plenty of work there. And the second big driver you mentioned, the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification, CMMC. This one impacts not just DOD itself, but the entire ecosystem of companies that support it, the Defense Industrial Base, or DIB.
CMMC is huge, and its impact is rippling out now. It requires potentially tens of thousands of defense contractors, the DIB companies, to meet really stringent cybersecurity standards. For example, CMMC Level 2 requires meeting 110 specific controls based on NIST SP 800-171. And crucially, they have to undergo assessments by certified third-party assessment organizations or C3PAOs.
So where does IMS fit in if they're not one of those assessment organizations?
Well, while IMS might not be a C3PO itself, this whole CMMC rollout creates a massive, potentially very high-margin secondary market for consulting services. Think about it. All those DIB companies need help preparing for their assessments.
Oh, the prep work.
Exactly. The deadline pressure is very real, with the first phase of required assessments apparently starting around November 10th, 2025. So IMS can provide critical consulting services to these DIB companies, doing gap analyses against the CMMC requirements, developing remediation plans, providing security control implementation consulting to help them get ready. It's really a blue ocean opportunity for them, leveraging their existing cybersecurity expertise into a whole new market segment.
Smart. Okay, within DoD, focusing on the Navy and Marines via Seaport NXG, which specific commands should be the hyper-focus for IMS initially?
Based on alignment, they should really focus on the system commands that are driving innovation and major programs. Naval Information Warfare Systems Command, NAVWAR, seems critical. NAVWAR is basically leading the Navy's big digital leap, responsible for C4ISR systems, space systems, cyberspace capabilities. Their mission aligns almost perfectly with IMS's technology consulting and program management consulting strengths, especially focusing on the program executive offices, the PEOs, within NAVWAR, like PEOC4I, which drives a lot of the network modernization.
Okay, NAVWAR makes sense. What about the commands that manage the big platforms, the ships, the submarines, the aircraft?
Right. You're talking about NAVISEA, the Naval Sea Systems Command, and NAVAIR, the Naval Air Systems Command. These commands manage arguably the world's largest and most complex acquisition efforts. They require constant expert-level program management support, sophisticated acquisition support, and integrated logistics support just to manage the immense costs and technical risks involved in building and maintaining these incredibly complex platforms. IMS's proven management consulting capabilities, especially in PMO setup and acquisition support, can provide that necessary stability and expertise they constantly need.
Okay, diversification is always smart business. While DHS and DoD are clearly the Tier 1 priorities, the sources also suggest cultivating some Tier 2 targets, specifically large civilian agencies that represent huge scale and potential growth. First on that list seems to be the Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA.
Yeah, the VA is just a market of almost unparalleled scale in the civilian government. We're talking a staggering $400 billion requested budget for FY 2025. It's enormous.
A mind-boggling number.
It really is. And the focal point for major IT opportunity within the VA right now is undoubtedly the ongoing Electronic Health Record Modernization Program, EHRM. They requested nearly $3.5 billion just for that program for 2026.
Wow. Just for the EHR program.
Just for that. And it's incredibly complex. It involves migrating vast amounts of sensitive patient data, completely redesigning clinical workflows that doctors and nurses have used for years, and managing the massive organizational change that comes with such a disruptive technology implementation. This level of complexity screams for IMS's specialized healthcare consulting expertise, particularly around data migration, clinical workflow redesign, and that crucial organizational change management piece.
And importantly, IMS isn't coming into this cold, right?
Yeah.
The sources mentioned they already have some strong, relevant past performance in military health that they can leverage here.
That's a huge advantage for them. They have a very powerful proof of concept. Apparently, IMS has over 100 medical coders already trained specifically on MHS Genesis, which is the DoD's electronic health record system.
Okay. Direct, relevant experience.
Direct, relevant experience. And they've been achieving over 97% accuracy consistently for 3 years, supporting MedCom, the Army's medical command, and also supporting Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. This depth of expertise in complex military health systems and managing sensitive clinical data provides a highly relevant, compelling precedent they can use when talking to the VA about the challenges within the EHRM program.
Makes perfect sense. Okay, the second Tier 2 target highlighted is the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, and specifically the National Institutes of Health, NIH, within HHS.
Right. NIH, with its 27 different institutes and centers, is just a massive consumer of high-level IT services and, importantly, management consulting expertise. They have significant ongoing needs for things like modernizing their grants management systems, a huge part of what NIH does, and providing program support for complex multi-billion-dollar research initiatives.
So less about direct healthcare delivery like the VA, more about the research and administrative side.
Exactly. And IMS can offer their specialized management and acquisition consulting services across NIH's diverse institutes. The sources note they already have a successful testimonial for providing acquisition support at NIH, which serves as a strong precedent they can build upon.
Got it. Okay, so we've identified the key target agencies, Tier 1 and Tier 2. Now let's pivot to the really tactical playbook. To be effective, IMS needs to move beyond just sending generic capability statements. They need to tailor their message to the specific pains and priorities of the people who actually sign the contracts, manage the programs, and make the decisions. We need to detail those highest priority federal personas.
Absolutely. Understanding the specific pain point of the person you're talking to is, you know, sales 101, but especially crucial in federal. So if you're talking to a chief information officer, a CIO, what are their primary headaches? Usually it's dealing with crushing legacy technology debt, the constant struggle to find and keep skilled tech talent, and the ever-present threat of GA audits or getting slapped with one of those high-risk designations we talked about at DHS.
Yeah, they're under a microscope.
Totally. They need to demonstrate measurable progress, show ROI to Congress and OMB. So the IMS value proposition to a CIO can't just be technical jargon. It has to be about solving those strategic problems.
So how does IMS frame that?
It's about, we help you build the winning business case to get funding for modernization. We guide you through that competitive TMF application process. We help you align your IT investments tightly with the agency's strategic goals to satisfy oversight. Essentially, IMS helps solve their budget justification and audit anxiety problems.
Okay, that makes sense. Next key persona, the Chief Information Security Officer, the CISO. Their world seems completely ruled by relentless compliance deadlines and threats.
Oh, the CISO is often drowning. Drowning in mandates EO14U28, M2209 for zero trust, constant CISA directives landing in their inbox, worrying about supply chain risk. They often suffer from acute alert fatigue from all their security tools, and they constantly struggle to translate all these technical requirements into budget justifications their leadership understands.
So what's the IMS pitch to the overwhelmed CISO?
It has to be crystal clear, focused on relief. Something like, we take the complexity out of compliance for you. We translate mandates like zero trust into an achievable phased roadmap that demonstrably reduces your immediate risk profile and helps guarantee your compliance posture for the auditors. They're essentially selling peace of mind, operational support, and risk reduction.
Got it. Now, the person often running the mission day to day is the program manager, the PM. They seem laser focused on just three things: cost, schedule, and performance.
The PM lives and dies by execution. Their biggest pain points are usually scope creep, blowing up their budget, vendors not delivering what they promised, and just navigating the incredibly complex maze of federal acquisition and security regulations to get anything done.
So they need reliability and risk reduction.
Exactly. IMS provides the stability they crave. Agile project management methodologies, maybe setting up a dedicated PMO for their program, providing that expert acquisition support to help them write better requirements and manage vendors. IMS needs to position itself as an integrated extension of the PM's own team, someone laser focused on ensuring the mission outcomes are actually met on time and on budget. They help de-risk the program for the PM.
Okay, and finally, we have to address the gateway to any contract award. The contracting officer, the CO, and often working closely with them, the agency's small business specialist.
Right. Their world is governed by the Federal Acquisition Regulation, the FAR. Their absolute top priorities are strict FAR compliance and, crucially, meeting those mandatory socioeconomic procurement goals we discussed earlier, like the WOSB goal. They need easy, reliable, compliant options.
So how does IMS make their life easier?
IMS provides a beautifully clean solution for them. As a proven, capable, women-owned small business, especially one that already holds pre-qualified access on major contract vehicles like Seaport NXG, IMS makes it incredibly simple for the CO to check the box, meet their mandated WOSB goal, while acquiring top-tier consulting support for their agency. It's the low-friction path to a compliant, high-value award. They solve a compliance problem for the CO directly.
Okay, let's talk about the competitive landscape. The federal consulting market is, it's a gladiatorial arena, right? It's crowded with absolute giants and massive primes like Leidos, Booz Allen Hamilton, and also the global big four consulting firms like Deloitte, PwC, et cetera. IMS clearly can't compete head-to-head on sheer scale. So how do they carve out a distinct competitive advantage?
Yeah, they absolutely cannot win a scale fight. So their positioning has to cleverly turn their size status into a strength. They can't compete on being big, so they have to market small, as actually meaning agile, personalized, and expert-led. They can contrast that with the sometimes perceived bureaucracy or slower responsiveness of the really big firms.
Turning a perceived negative into a positive.
Exactly. Niche doesn't mean limited. It means specialized and deeply expert-led in critical areas like zero trust or acquisition support. And that WOSB status isn't just a designation. It's marketed as a strategic advantage for meeting procurement goals, making them an easy choice for COs and primes. Their unique proposition really has to emphasize that integrated approach we talked about, seamlessly combining technology, cybersecurity, and management consulting. The sources suggest this integrated capability is often fragmented across different siloed business units at some of the larger primes, which can create friction for the client.
Okay, so that integrated, agile, expert-led WOSB advantage positioning makes sense. That brings us then to the consolidated recommendations, a sort of strategic roadmap for IMS to actually accelerate mission speed by focusing on the right targets with the right message. What are the absolute critical actions for IMS coming out of this analysis?
Based on everything we've discussed and what the sources highlight, there seem to be five key strategic actions.
Focus relentlessly on Tier 1 targets. They need to allocate the vast majority, say at least 80%, of their proactive business development efforts, their marketing resources, onto DHS and DOD over the next, say, 24 months. That's where the mandates are strongest, the compelling events are clearest, and they have vehicle access like Seaport NXG.
Makes sense. Number two.
Second, weaponize Seaport NXG. Don't just have it, use it aggressively. They need to launch a dedicated, highly targeted campaign specifically aimed at securing at least one initial Navy task order within the next 12 months. Use that WOSB status, highlight relevant past performance, and execute that land and expand strategy effectively.
Get that first Navy win. Okay, third.
Third, lead with compliance. They need to consciously reframe all their service messaging to explicitly address those high-priority federal mandates we discussed, EO 14028, OMB M2209 for Zero Trust, CMMC, etc. Position IMS clearly as the expert solution provider in compliance as a service. Make it easy for agencies to see how IMS solves their mandatory problems.
Got it. Fourth action.
Fourth, target the high-risk list directly. Develop a specific, focused marketing campaign centered entirely on helping DHS components resolve those specific IT and financial management findings identified on the GAO high-risk list. Go right at the publicly documented problems with tailored solutions. It's a direct response to a mandated need.
Addressing the pain points head-on. And the fifth recommendation.
Fifth, build the prime pipeline. They need to formalize strategic, likely non-exclusive partnership programs with maybe 5 to 10 key large prime contractors who are major players at DHS and DOD. The goal here is to secure a steady, higher volume stream of subcontracting work. This accelerates revenue, but more importantly, it accelerates the acquisition of that broad, verifiable past performance they'll need to win larger prime contracts themselves down the road.
Okay, those five actions seem like a very clear, actionable roadmap. This has been a really exhaustive deep dive. I think it confirms that the federal need for a company like Integrated Management Strategies isn't just speculative. It's really being driven by regulatory certainty, ironically, in the face of constant threat and change. They seem to have a clear path forward defined by these policy mandates, key contract vehicles, and very precise target personas they need to engage.
Absolutely. And that tension you mentioned between certainty and uncertainty, it really defines the modern federal landscape right now. You know, we've discussed how agencies are facing this constant barrage of short-term, often audit-driven compliance needs, hitting zero trust deadlines, getting ready for CMMC, fixing those GAO high-risk findings. These are urgent fires they have to put out.
Right, the immediate pressures.
Exactly. But simultaneously, they're also facing that inevitable long-term, almost existential threat we talked about, which is the massive, multi-decade, post-quantum cryptography migration. And this raises a really important kind of provocative question, I think, for you, the listener, to consider as you track this market going forward. How will federal leaders, who are almost always strapped for both budget and specialized staff, effectively balance that critical need to satisfy these immediate urgent compliance deadlines with the necessary strategic long-term investments required for a massive, slow-moving transformation like PQC?
That's a tough balancing act.
It really is. The real risk is that the tyranny of the urgent, all those immediate compliance demands, completely consumes the strategic capital and attention required for ensuring long-term cybersecurity survival against future threats like quantum computing. It's a critical leadership challenge.
A fascinating and absolutely critical balancing act for any federal leader today. That concludes this deep dive into the source material.